every time I have tried to tackle this question, I just can't get an answer. I got to ask you this. This area that we're talking about tonight, the angels and these divine creatures and beings, how did it come to be?
You're going to have to define what it is. how does it be more specific?
The God element, the angelic element. I'm having trouble trying to understand how we came to be, the planet itself. Mm-hmm. And now we put this into the equation, it becomes even more perplexing. Was it a natural evolution of what everything is in this universe, or was it unnatural?
So you're really asking, why do we have God and gods and angels and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I approach it from a philosophical standpoint. What I want to know personally is, what is coherent? What is logically coherent? And because that's a concern, and frankly, I think it ought to be a concern for everybody, you go back to the beginning point. Is it more philosophically coherent to say that everything that is created itself, or is it more philosophically coherent to say everything that is was created by some external being or force? Well, I'm in the being or force category, so once I move to that category, then I have to ask myself, is it a being or is it a force? Well, it would seem to me that if it's a force, I mean, that almost speaks, it definitely speaks of an impersonal force as opposed to a specific creator. And frankly, I don't think it's coherent that an impersonal, catch the term, impersonal force has personal desires or makes personal decisions. And so I'm forced, again, I think, by philosophical coherence to opt for a creator. I mean, this is an old question, and I think what modern physics has shown us is that the universe did have a beginning, and then once physics determines that for us, then that moves you into the realm of philosophy, and you are forced by philosophical coherence, just the rules of the game, to conclude that there is a creator out there. Now, when you make that decision, then you, of course, have to ask, well, how did he do it? And I think you got a number of options here. I personally think that not just the biblical text, but since I'm on the show and that's my area, we'll stick with that. But I think that the biblical text supports, it can support, a number of different options. You, of course, have God said it, that's everything, which is the very traditional view. You talk about the Big Bang, where I come from. Now, I'm not saying I believe this, although I think it's coherent. The idea of there being, of God being the catalyst to all that is in terms of a Big Bang. I mean, there are people theologically that have no problem with that. I don't. I'm so used to, and maybe this is a bad thing, but where I live and where I go to church, where I went to grad school, our church is just cluttered with PhDs, and almost all of them are scientists, and almost all of them are what we would call old earth creationists or theistic evolutionists, that there was a Big Bang. God did that. That's the way we describe the initial creation event. And then everything else proceeds from that. Some of them accept evolution as part of that. Some of them don't. I think that the text itself can sustain any of those views. Now, they all have their problems. The traditional view has its problems.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like, which one do you think has less problems? And a sub-question is, which one do you think conforms better to what we really, you know, we're not omniscient, but what we really
understand,
know about science?
Yeah.
Okay, again, we're not assuming our own omniscience here. And, you know, I like the old Earth creationist view that incorporates a Big Bang. I don't know. I wasn't there. But what I can say is that I think in my discipline, the text certainly allows for that. But it all goes back to a personal creator who can make personal decisions, had personal desires. And one of them was that we exist. Now, whether you say that that's for company, I don't think that's real coherent. I mean, if, if God is perfect, he doesn't need the company. But it was evident, because we're here, that he liked it. And he wanted to commune with us. He wanted there to be an earth. He wanted to create humankind as his image.
Are there a million earths out there?
I think there could be. You know, what's the really interesting thing is, in the history of the church, and this will really kind of, I think it'll floor some of your listeners, in the history of the church, it used to be dogma. It used to be a litmus test theologically that you believe in other worlds. This is a very old question. It goes all the way back pre-church to Aristotle, but are there other worlds? And in church history around the 1200s, theologians came up with something called the principle of plenitude, which just means that the universe, to quote, you know, Carl Sagan and a few others, is teeming with life. And the reason that we believe that as theologians is because to not believe that limits God's power, and that was offensive. So you actually have, like, Nicholas of Cusa and a few other famous church history figures saying that if you don't believe this, it's heresy, you know, to not believe this, because you're limiting God, and that is just bad. It wasn't until you get to the Enlightenment, the 17th century, and later in the 1700s and the 18th century in our country, where you have people who were very antagonistic to the Judeo-Christian view and the Judeo-Christian scriptures coming up with what they thought were good angles to test the church, to test theology on this ground. Thomas Paine was one of the first. We all know who he is from history class.
Yeah.
He said that the church can't believe in other worlds because that would require, and trust me, I don't know where his logic was coming here, because that would require Jesus to die on every planet. You know, I don't know why that would, but his argument became one of the arguments of the day in theological circles. And eventually the church reversed its position that, boy, you know, maybe Jesus would have to die everywhere, and that doesn't make any sense, so we have to give up. Maybe we shouldn't believe in other worlds. And so there was a shift. And nowadays the debate's different. A lot of people who are religious in a Western sense, Judeo-Christian worldview, don't like the idea that there could be extraterrestrials, because that idea has been linked with origins. Well, if there's E.T., if there's an E.T. out there, he must have created us. Again, I don't know why. Even if there's a genetic similarity. Hey, there's a genetic similarity between us and pigs. Did they make us? Did we make them? No.
No, not at all.
The answer to both is no. So I don't see where this is coherent. But again, I don't speak for the world here. A lot of people in the church...
But you're talking to the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. A lot of people in the church are really troubled with the idea of extraterrestrial life for that reason and a couple others. And, you know, I personally understand when I say this, I don't really care. I mean, I think it would be neat. I don't think it has anything to do with origins. It really doesn't answer anything, to be honest with you. Let's say E.T. lands on the White House lawn tomorrow. Well, then the question just becomes, where did you come from?
Yes.
You know, you can't create yourself either, so you don't answer the question of ultimate origins. So we're just back to square one, which we've been there for millennia. So I think it would be neat. I don't find it troubling at all. But again, that's me. And there are a lot of people within the religious community that are quite troubled by it.